Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, guys? Don't forget to sub to Patreon so that you can see the visuals. Because not only do we have episodes of the podcast, we have exclusive content that nobody else sees on any other apps, behind the scenes, photo shoots, and we're dropping a whole bunch of surprising stuff this year. So if you guys don't want to miss out and you want to be the first to know, go over to our Patreon, www.dumbblondeunrated.com. Love ya. Is this thing on?
Bonnie, who used to be a former sex worker and now hosts the podcast Dumb Blonde.
Most little girls grow up wanting to be doctors and lawyers and shit. And I was like, I want to be super hot, make a lot of fucking money, and be a rock star's wife. That was my goal as a child. And here we are.
What's up, babies? Welcome back to another episode of Dumb Blonde. Today we have America's holistic plastic surgeon in the house, Dr. Anthony Yoon. What's up, baby? How are you?
Thank you so much for having me on the show. This will be a lot of fun.
Dude, I'm so stoked to have you. My husband is even more stoked that you're here.
Oh, that's awesome.
I had no idea that he was such a huge fan of yours.
I didn't. You just told me this. I'm shocked, and I mean, it's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I saw his talk at the CMAs, and like, it's great. I mean, I'm a fan myself.
It's crazy because he's like that at home. And I'll be like, who are you preaching to? I'm like, it's just me and the kid here. Like, you don't have an audience. Tone it down, Bubba. You know? So that's literally what you see is what you get with him. So you are kind of like doing a podcast tour right now because you, my sweet sir, are a author.
Yes.
Yes. And you've written 4 books.
Yes. So this is my 4th. This is an anti-aging book called Younger for Life that I'm super proud of. And I really appreciate that you're having me on today.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to dive into what this is and stuff like that. You have 3 other books. One of them is called The Age Fix, In Stitches, and Playing God.
Yes. So I actually wrote 2 memoirs about becoming a doctor and then becoming a plastic surgeon and kind of the craziness that ensues. And then I've written 2 anti-aging books, The Age Fix, and then this is my latest one.
I mean, I need all the anti-aging tips that you can give me.
You look like you're 12 years old. What are you talking about?
Listen, do you want to make out? Because we can. I definitely want to talk about whenever you went to medical school, because one of those stories actually resonated with me, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But let's talk about how you were influenced by your father to become a doctor, and take me on that journey and stuff like that as a child.
Yeah, so I basically grew up in a traditional Korean household. My parents immigrated here from Korea before I was born. And so the day literally that I was born, my dad decided I was going to be a doctor. But it's not that I was going to be any doctor. Like, that wasn't enough. Like, I was going to be either a neurosurgeon, a cardiac surgeon, you know, a transplant surgeon, one of these like high-powered surgical specialties. And pretty quickly as I was in medical school, I realized that this was not my personality. The day that I saw a 60-year-old man stumble out of a call room in the middle of the night to attend to a trauma, I was like, I don't want to be that guy. And then even throughout all my training, I did 3 years of general surgery training where I trained as a general surgeon, and you're working the ICUs, you're working in trauma bays. I was just honestly deathly afraid that one of my patients would die and it would be my fault.
Aww.
And so it always stressed me out. And luckily I went through all my training and nobody did.
Right.
You know, I mean, people died, but it wasn't because I didn't do something.
Right.
And so I realized very quickly that that just wasn't for me. And so I ended up finding the field of plastic surgery, which really talked to me a lot. The interesting thing is I initially thought I was going to do family practice for a while. So I'm like, I don't want to be this type of surgeon. Maybe I'll do family practice and work with families and stuff. And my dad was not approving of that at all.
Your dad was an OBGYN, correct?
Yes.
So that's kind of why he was, you know, the traditional, you know, just this is how you're going to do it and I'm planning your life out. How did that make you feel as a child? Did you feel like you just didn't have a choice?
So, yeah, but I was like the middle child. Mm-hmm. So I was the dutiful middle child. You tell me to do something and I'll do it. But, you know, for him, he grew up on a rice farm in Korea with six other siblings. Mm-hmm. And he became a doctor. They put all their resources into him, and then he literally lifted his whole family up out of poverty, and he brought half of them here to the United States, where they kind of now are living the American dream. And so for him, all he knew was that doctor equals success.
Right.
And so he didn't want his kids to be living on the streets, but then his belief was either you live on the streets or you're a doctor and there's nothing in between. Like, he didn't know.
He's like, look, it works for me, it'll work
yeah,
for you, bud.
Yeah. So then I thought maybe I'll do family practice, and I told him, and he was really unhappy with that. And one night as I was visiting my parents after I told him I was going to do, and he was really unhappy.
And he was just unhappy because he didn't feel like you were like being an overachiever, or he felt like you were kind of slacking off.
It wasn't enough.
Okay.
It wasn't enough to be proud of him, you know, my son. Like, you know, we always want in our children more than what we have.
Right.
You know, and for him, he looked at that was less than what he had.
Mm. That's going to be a heavy, kind of a heavy cross to bear for you, because you're like, damn, Dad, I just want to do what I want to do.
I mean, I think that is.
Yeah.
But you know, what happened is I'm at home, I'm visiting for a night, and I'm in my twin bed that I grew up in, you know, when I was a kid. And 2 a.m, the door opens up and my dad tells me, move over. So here I go, I scoot over, and the two of us, two adult males, are lying in my twin bed looking at the ceiling, and he goes, Tony, if you want to be a family practice doctor, you can. Aww. He goes, you will never pay off your loans, you're going to be poor for the rest of your life, you're going to be seeing 50 patients a day, but if you want to do that, then that is fine. And then shortly thereafter, after he gave me his blessing, I ended up finding the field of plastic surgery and absolutely loved it.
Well, plastic surgery holds a spot dear to your heart, too, because as you say in one of your books, you talk about how you were you had a feature that you were, you know, I don't want to say embarrassed by, but just didn't like about yourself. Can we dive into that a little bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was, quote unquote, normal looking until probably about the 10th grade. I went through a growth spurt and my jaw started growing basically twice as quickly as the rest of my face and the rest of my body, to the point where when I was a senior in high school, my jaw was huge, to the point where I could actually stick my tongue through the gap between my upper and my lower teeth.
Wow.
And I hated looking at pictures of myself from the side. And even if, like, with my senior photos from high school, you could see that it just doesn't look quite right.
Right.
So I ended up having plastic surgery. I actually had my jaw broken and set back between high school and college. And it really taught me the power of how changing your appearance can absolutely change the trajectory of your life.
Right.
Because prior to that, I had very low self-esteem. You know, I had self-image problems, and I thought I looked deformed. And then afterwards, it really did help me. Now, you know, I go to college, and here I think that I'm going to, you know, well, I actually look actually pretty decent now, like a regular person. And I thought, okay, the girls are going to like me now.
Aww.
And I couldn't find a date through all 4 years of college.
So. I find that hard to believe.
No, 4 years. Yeah. Oh, I don't know what happened, but.
So maybe you were just too shy to, like,
I'm
seal
not sure.
the deal.
I don't know. But yeah. So, but that really did teach me how changing your appearance can really help to change your life. In ways that, you know, I mean, I do all cosmetic surgery. I have a complete skincare center and stuff like that. But at the same time, you know, knowing that, I think personally, that does make a big difference.
Absolutely. You had also said in one of your books that you had some dark chapters dealing with certain physicians that were kind of self-absorbed and money hungry. Can you take me on that journey too? Yeah,
I think you
just called it like a God complex or something.
Yeah, so I mean, as a plastic surgeon, so I ended up doing 3 years of general surgery, and then I did 2 years of plastic surgery, and then I spent a year out in Beverly Hills where I worked with a top-name plastic surgeon. And I tell you, plastic surgery in Beverly Hills was a big eye-opener because I did most of my training out in Michigan at Michigan State with plastic surgeons that I felt were ethical. They were there to treat, you know, take care of patients and stuff. Yeah, I mean, these are kind of Midwest, down-to-earth doctors who are there to take care of people. Then you go to Beverly Hills and my gosh, it was
nobody has
crazy.
A soul. Yeah.
And it was all about money out there. I mean, it was a point, I remember there was a situation once where I was working with a plastic surgeon and we were working on a woman, African-American, larger woman, we were doing liposuction on her. And she was HIV positive. And we were doing the surgery on her and all of a sudden he says, yep, that's it, we're done. And I go, well, we haven't finished the operation. Like, there's still these other areas that we can make better. He goes, you know what? She has HIV. She paid enough money. Like, we don't have to do that anymore.
Oh,
and I was just like, what? And I mean, I'm the fellow, so it's not my patient. I can't tell him, you know, we need to do this. But, you know, things like that, you see these things happen over and over again. Out there, I knew a doctor who would actually call the local news, lie to them about a death, let's say, that happened in the OR of a competing surgeon. And so I was there once where a doctor called and said, hey, yeah, is this ABC News? He's like, yeah, you know, I'm not going to tell you who I am. I'm a local plastic surgeon, but I need to let you know that Dr. So-and-so had a patient die in his operating room yesterday. You know, you need to look into that. And it was so not true.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, people, there are even stories of people sending patients to other plastic surgeons as a way to eventually sue them. So that the patient gets surgery and then eventually sues them just to try to push these people out of practice. It's
you guys
crazy.
Need your own reality show. It's like the house husbands of Beverly Hills. That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's so unethical and just wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's the stuff that happens out there was nuts. And so I really, after being there for a year, I ended up coming back to Detroit, where my wife's family is from, and I started my own practice there. And
you're like,
did it the
I'm
way
not working for anybody ever again.
Yeah, it's like, I want to do this the right way, where I'm here to take care of people. I've taken ER call for accidents and dog bites and stuff for 20 years. And
yeah, there was a story that I read that you had said, there was a lady that you had worked for, and she said that they're the chronically ill in an emergency room. She had said something to you that kind of like offended you about the people who would come in the emergency room, they're chronically ill and they don't get better and they don't die or something like that.
I mean, there are so many, you know, I think working the ER and it's hard because there are people who are, I mean, the healthcare system is so broken.
Yes.
And it's so hard because the emergency room now is a place where a lot of people will go for everything.
Yes.
And they are completely overrun. You know, the emergency room at the hospital I work out of, I had a patient who was there recently. She actually was a patient of a different doctor who was admitted to the hospital with an infection. They asked me to take care of her. And I said, sure, that's fine. And she was there for 3 days and never actually got a hospital bed, like a room.
Wow.
She was in the hallway for 3 days.
Oh my goodness.
Because there just weren't any rooms available because so many people are using the ER, unfortunately, for things that aren't necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff going on in healthcare right now that the whole system is broken and I'm not sure how to fix it.
Yeah.
But throughout my training, that was something that you really saw a lot of.
Absolutely. I myself have gotten into holistic medicine in the past, probably I'd have to say 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that with holistic medicine, it treats the problem and it doesn't put a Band-Aid on it. Like it tries to get to a deeper root of it.
The root cause.
Being a holistic plastic surgeon, what does that entail exactly?
So basically the story is that I go to LA, I come back to Michigan, I start my practice, and you know, we're taught in surgery the term to cut is to cure, or the only way to heal is with cold steel. And the idea is that your goal is to bring people to the operating room. Now, if you're a general surgeon, the goal ideally that the big surgery that you want to do is called the Whipple. And this is a large 10-hour cancer operation. And if you're so lucky that you can do a Whipple, you know you've reached the pinnacle of success.
Wow.
In plastic surgery, it's probably the facelift. Because patients may trust almost anybody to do their liposuction, but you know if they're trusting you to do their facelift, that you are, you know, the cream of the crop.
Right.
And so for many years, Bunny, I actually gauged the success of my practice based off how many facelifts I was doing, how many I had on my schedule. It's kind of dumb, but that was how I gauged it.
Yeah.
And I got to a point where I was the busiest person in town. I had a 1-year waiting list of people flying in all over the country to see me. And then I had a patient of mine who absolutely completely changed the trajectory of my career. Mm. This was a 60-some-year-old woman who came to see me for a facelift. And she looked like she was a good candidate for it. Her internal medicine doctor cleared her for surgery. And then she was even cleared by a cardiologist. So I performed the operation on a Thursday. It's about a 3.5-hour surgery. We keep her overnight in the hospital, which at that time I was doing routinely. And then the next morning I saw her and she was doing great. And I sent her home. The weekend goes by and Monday I get to my office and I have a message from her daughter. And the message was, why did my mom die? And I was absolutely floored. I've had this a nausea in the pit of my stomach. I literally couldn't form words. And I eventually got on the phone with her and she said, my mom died on Saturday. Like, what happened? I hadn't heard anything. So it turns out that she suddenly died that Saturday. So like the 2 days, like literally after her operation. And I went to her chart and I looked and like, what happened here? I tried to find something that could have caused this. Mm-hmm. Was there a medication error? Was there medication interaction? Was there something about her health history that I didn't catch? And there was nothing, like nothing that I could find. Mm-hmm. It turns out when her autopsy came back later on, she had a massive heart attack. Even though I had cleared her from a cardiologist standpoint, like I did everything. The only thing I could have done to prevent this was just not operate on her.
Right.
So this sent me into a complete tailspin. And for months, I considered quitting medicine altogether. I considered choosing a different, you know, going back to residency, finding some other type of a way to, you know, practice medicine. And I really questioned everything that I was taught. And it got me into thinking, finally, when I hit rock bottom, and I just, you know, I prayed to God, like, you know, what do I do? You know, what am I doing with my life? You know, there's this Hippocratic oath of do no harm, like, am I doing harm? You know, am I, by doing these operations, doing harm on people? And it got me into really realizing that what I had believed was wrong. Like the goal of being a surgeon is not to bring people to surgery. It should be the opposite. It Right. should be, how do I keep people out of surgery, yet still help them to look and feel their best
Right.
without going under the knife? And then that started me kind of delving into alternative and holistic medicine. And that eventually became this book. And this concept of autojuvenation. Mm-hmm. And it really is, it's the fact that our bodies have the regenerative abilities to rejuvenate itself.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We just have to give it the right tools and the right environment to do that.
Right.
And it composes five main things that I focus on. It's what you eat, when you eat, nutritional supplements, skincare, and non-invasive treatments. Mm. And I firmly believe that 80 to 90% of people, if you focus on those things and you do it right, that you can look and feel your best and feel fantastic and look fantastic without having surgery and not feel like you need to.
Absolutely. And I love that message too, because in a world where we are literally just bombarded with plastic surgery and stuff like that, to hear an actual plastic surgeon say, hey, you don't have to go under the knife, you just need to do these things. And I really truly believe you are what you eat. Like,
yes.
A lot of people will argue with you and say, oh, it doesn't matter. No, it really does matter. The beginning of the year, I started having some really bad health problems that mm-hmm. I had no idea where it came from. Cardiologist appointments. I had to wear EKG for a week. I mean, I'm talking like everything. Come to find out, no doctor could pinpoint what was wrong with me. They tried mm-hmm. to put me on blood pressure medications. They tried to do everything. And I had to be my own advocate. And I was like, I'm not doing that. Come to find out, I was allergic to rice. Oh, wow. Rice was really setting off my body. But I, in order to find out that I was allergic to rice, I had to cut out seed oils. I had to go, I've been non-dairy for at least 10 years now, but no white flours, no sugar, like nothing. And yeah. It has completely changed my entire being. And so you are what you eat, and that's a huge thing. And then what's number two?
Number two is when you eat. Mm-hmm. And so that's something where, you know, one of the main causes of aging of our body is a buildup of cellular waste. And so basically our cells, just the act of being alive, we create cellular waste products. And these are proteins and organelles and things inside our cells that can actually build up. And this waste product can build up in our cells unless we clean our cells out from the inside. And the way we do that, it's a process called autophagy, and that means self-eating. And essentially, when your body runs out of fuel, it starts to use this intracellular waste, these proteins and organelles inside our cells, and recycles them for energy.
Absolutely.
And that causes our cells to actually clean themselves out on the inside, to function more efficiently, more youthfully, and it's a great way to essentially turn back the clock and get our body working more youthfully again. But for that to happen, we have to stop eating constantly. Mm-hmm. So the problem is, you know, as our standard American diet and our lifestyle, we are constantly snacking. Mm-hmm. And whenever you're constantly eating, you do not allow that process to happen.
Absolutely.
And so one of the main benefits, and I encourage people, even if you just do, you know, a 12-hour, a 16-hour fast, to try to do that where you take just a period of time, even as little as 12 hours, where you stop eating at 8 p.m., and you don't eat again until the next morning at 8 a.m., that's great because it allows your body that time to for your gut to rest and for your body to kind of clean itself out from the inside using this process of autophagy.
Yes, I love fasting. I fast every day. Like, I'll stop eating at like 7 o'clock at night, and then I won't eat until the next morning at like 12 or 1. Mm-hmm. But then I read a book called How to Fast Like a Girl, written by Dr. Oh gosh, I forget her name.
I've heard of it. Yeah.
And it was amazing, and it was life changing because, you know, around a woman's period, you can also do these protocols and where you go into ketosis and it's so healing. I have more energy when I don't eat and I fast than I do when I do eat.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. It's the human body is so fascinating. Yeah. Like, we're our own science project.
Yes. And I think the thing is that a lot of people don't realize, and traditional medicine is not good with this, is that I do believe that there's this thing called bioindividuality, where you may react poorly to rice, but like, I've eaten rice all my life. You know,
right.
I grew up eating it and I'm fine with it. But that doesn't mean, you know, because I'm fine with it, that you should be fine
right.
with it. And traditional medicine is not really good with that part of it. And so really, I think it's important to be aware of your own body and what your triggers are, like what makes you feel healthy and good, and to follow that, even if it may not completely jive with what most doctors say that in general people should do.
Absolutely. Have you ever heard of the blood diet?
The blood diet?
Yes.
So, is that some type of vampire thing?
I wish.
I know you guys are into macabre stuff.
So the blood diet is you get your blood drawn and you find out what your blood type is, and you eat according to your blood type.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always thought it was like kind of hocus pocus, and I didn't believe it until I went through the health stuff. And my body just doesn't react good to carbs. Some people can eat heavy carbs, and I just can't, you know, come to find out both my parents are diabetics, you know? So it's like, it's crazy and it's fascinating. So what's we're on number three, right?
Number three would be supplements.
Supplements. Let's talk about that because have you ever heard of the MTHFR gene mutation?
They call it the mother effer gene.
Yeah, the mother effer gene. Do you know a lot about it or?
Some, yeah. I mean, it is something that there's a belief that you may have an increased risk of clotting with that. And so some people who have multiple miscarriages, that's something that GYN doctors will look at. For us, we look at it for surgery just because of the potential risk of bleeding after surgery.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know a ton. I mean, it's still, the mother effer gene is still something that traditional doctors, some of them will poo-poo.
Right.
And more of my functional medicine friends, they talk a little bit more about that. But I do think that that's a real thing that we need to pay definitely more attention to.
Absolutely. I think it's becoming more widespread in the United States. And I think more people are coming to realize that I was diagnosed with that gene.
Oh,
so
okay.
I say all this to say that certain supplements react crazy with my body. I overdosed on supplements.
I heard that.
By accident.
Yes.
Like, who the fuck can overdose?
I've never heard of somebody overdosing on supplements and having those types of symptoms, but I heard that story.
Crazy, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Anybody with MTHFR gene mutation aside, what kind of supplements do you recommend for a daily basis?
Yes. So for me, I have friends of mine who are quote unquote biohackers, where they'll take like 100 pills a day. And that's just like, I mean, if you want to do that, then that's fine. These are people who like they make their living just trying to biohack their body. But the vast majority of people, like that's not doable.
That's insane. Yes. I've never heard of that. Now I'm going to go study that.
Yeah, I have friends of mine who are like, well, depending on the time of day and how they feel that day, they'll take this drawer of supplements or that drawer. So the way the way I look at it is very basic. Okay.
Right.
Everybody should take a good daily multivitamin. One of the main reasons why our skin ages is nutrient depletion. Mm. There's a belief that our fruits and vegetables today are not as nutritious as they used to be. And this is a belief in holistic medicine. Yeah. And they say, oh, well, the soil has been, because of industrial farming practices, it's been depleted of nutrients. So is there proof of that? Well, there actually was a study that looked at from 1950 to 1999, looking at various fruits and vegetables here in the United States, and found a significant reduction in six key nutrients. And three of those ones that stood out to me are iron, protein, and vitamin C.
Yes.
All of these super important for the skin, especially. Mm. And so supplements can definitely help with that part of it. So I always recommend taking a daily multivitamin. I recommend taking a omega-3 fatty acid supplement, so like fish oil, for the good healthy fats. I recommend taking a probiotic because in the past, we ate a lot more fermented foods. Mm. Okay, we've got a microbiome in our gut. That is the trillions of bacteria that live inside our gut. And we are finding out over the last 10 to 15 years that the quality and the health of that bacteria is absolutely essential to our overall health.
Absolutely. I mean, it's your first brain.
Yeah. And there's crazy things that they've done. They've taken actually a rat and have taken a rat that's overweight and a rat that's underweight. And they've actually done fecal transplants from the underweight rat to the overweight rat. And you know what happens? Mm-mm. The overweight rat loses a bunch of weight.
Wow.
Because you think that by moving the microbiome from one rat to another, it completely changes how their body reacts. And this is a lot of stuff that we just don't really know a lot about.
Right.
So, but what we do know, once again, is the microbiome is extremely important. And so, and we don't eat fermented foods in our diet at all, other than like... Mm.
I love kimchi, though.
Yogurt, yeah, and sauerkraut, brats, like in the summer, like that's it.
Yeah.
Now, I grew up eating kimchi, a lot of kimchi. Mm-hmm. You know, we eat a lot of like pickled vegetables and stuff like that. So really important to take a daily probiotic, at least 3 billion colony-forming units a day is what I usually recommend.
Do you recommend the ones that have to be refrigerated? Do the majority of them have to be refrigerated?
Yeah, that's usually a sign that it's probably good, because if it's not, then you got to wonder, is it high quality?
Right.
Because you want to refrigerate them to make sure that they're still alive.
Right.
Yeah. And so then the next supplement that I would recommend typically is an antioxidant supplement. Mm-hmm. One of the main reasons why our skin ages prematurely is due to oxidation and free radicals. Mm-hmm. Essentially, these are damaging molecules that will damage the DNA of our cells. And these free radicals essentially are neutralized by antioxidants. That's why people say, hey, eat the rainbow of fruits and vegetables, because the actual color of those fruits and vegetables, that is the pigment is the actual antioxidant. Mm-hmm. And so by eating various colors of fruits and vegetables, you get a lot of different antioxidants to help fight those free radicals.
Yes.
And what food has the most free radicals? Ultra-processed foods. Mm. And so trying to limit ultra-processed foods in the diet is definitely healthy for your skin.
Yes, I had to cut those out too, so I eat everything fresh now, which a lot of people always say, oh, you know, it's expensive to eat that way. And it is. America has made it very hard for people to not eat bad.
It's more expensive to eat healthy foods than it is to eat foods that are not healthy for you.
Yeah,
and
especially
it's harder to find them.
Yeah, especially if you buy organic and stuff too.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then what was the fourth one?
Antioxidants. And then the fifth one is collagen supplements. So are you taking a collagen supplement? Have you done that?
So I've tried, and my body is so weird. It kind of like sends me into like a little bit of a depression. So I,
really?
Ever since I did the overdose on supplements, I am just raw dogging life right now.
That's all right.
But I try to get my supplements through my food.
Yeah.
So I eat really healthy.
You can't out supplement a bad diet.
Right.
So doing it that way is definitely better.
Yeah, you think?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean,
can't I poop then? I'm just kidding.
You're not on a carnivore diet, are you?
No.
I don't know how they poop because
I don't either.
I don't get it. Like, if you get no fiber, like, It would be bad for me. Really bad.
I can't eat, like, I'll eat red meat once a month, like around my period, but I try to stick to like chicken, like lean meats, you know, but like my digestive system is just completely thrown off. Since I got off supplements, it's been crazy. But I do love collagen. I love any sort. Anytime anybody asks me, hey, do you ever just wish that you were younger? And I'm like, the only thing I'm ever jealous of younger women is their collagen.
Yes.
Like, I want it all. Give it all to me.
Yeah. I mean, so we have 70 to 80% of our skin is basically made up of collagen. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I really encourage people to focus on, if you're looking at the aging process, is really focusing on that collagen. Collagen, basically, they're like the logs of a log cabin. And the collagen is what causes our skin to feel tight and firm and smooth and youthful. Mm-hmm. And like everything in life, we start losing it. It starts getting thinner, starting at 1% a year when we're in about our mid-20s. And then women, once they go through menopause, it goes up to about 2% a year. And that's why you may see women who are in their 60s or 70s and they've got tissue paper thin skin and they get scratched and it literally can tear their skin.
So
that's one thing, you know, if you can tolerate collagen supplements, I do recommend them. I do think they help. Studies show that they definitely help with the thickness of collagen in your skin. The other thing though is collagen is a protein. And so eating higher protein, especially as you get older, can definitely be helpful with your skin as well as other body parts as well.
I preach to my team all the time. I'm like, you guys need more protein, because I eat like 135 grams of protein a day.
Oh, wow. That's not easy to do, especially if you're intermittent fasting.
No, it's not. Well, so I have perfected the art of an eating window. So like I get all my, and I know that they say that you're only supposed to do like 35 grams each meal or something like that. But I just really try to like break up three meals and just make it work, you know? So a lot of yogurt in the morning, a lot of protein, you know, the protein yogurt, and then a lot of ground chicken, you know, for dinner and stuff like that. So, but yeah, I'm always preaching to them. I'm like, you guys need to have more protein. They're like, shut the fuck up, leave me alone. And I'm like, no, it's like, it really helps your body.
It is. And there definitely is a huge push now in nutrition and nutrition circles that the lower protein diets are definitely not the best, especially as you get older. You know, we develop something called sarcopenia, and this is basically breakdown of muscle as we get older.
Right.
And you know, one of the things that we worry about as we get older, and a very common cause of death, is breaking a hip. Okay. And so,
God, that causes death.
There was one study that found that over the age of 50, and I'm like 51, so I guess I'm in that group now.
Goodness, that if you I'm break your hip,
if you break your hip over the age of 51, it's something like a 30% mortality over 12 months.
Goodness gracious. Yeah. Why is there like a,
so it's just, it's so integral. And I think part of it is that it's so hard to recover from.
And so
a big thing as you get older is trying to keep mobile, trying to keep your reflexes as well as your balance intact. It's so, so important.
Right. Yoga.
Yes. So that's one of the big things in my book is yoga. So really what you want to look at is balance and strength via the fast twitch muscle fibers. So to put it simply, you know, there's a lot of people as they get older, they believe that walking is the only exercise they need to do. Okay. Like, oh, you know, and that, and my parents and my in-laws, that's what they think too. It's like, oh, I walk, you know, 2 miles a day. So that's all I have to do. The problem, but that's a fallacy. Now, walking is great. It's super important. You know, if you get those 10,000 steps, that's awesome. And that will definitely help with your healing or with your aging overall and being healthy.
Right.
But the problem with just walking, when you think about it, is you're only using those muscles that propel you forward.
Right.
You're not using any other muscles.
Anything else.
Okay. And those are called slow twitch muscle fibers. Slow twitch muscle fibers are those fibers that our body uses for kind of endurance, where, you know, you're kind of doing the same thing over and over again in a slow fashion. Those are slow twitch muscle fibers. Fast twitch muscle fibers are those fibers that we, those muscles that we use for essentially explosive movement. Okay. So if you're going for sprints, if you're doing HIIT workouts, a lot of times you're using kind of the fast twitch muscle fibers. They're also the muscle fibers that will go into play if you trip, if you're about to fall. Those are the ones that will steady you. You know, that's why, you know, if you see, you may see an older person who's like 70 or 80 and they trip on something and they just fall and hit their face.
Right. It's like slow motion.
Yes, because they haven't been working those fast twitch muscle fibers. So they don't have those reflexes, those reaction time where if you or I, we hit a corner or a curb and we start to fall, we will steady ourselves very quickly because those muscle fibers are still working. So those muscle fibers, they degenerate as we get older. And that's one reason why older people, they trip on something and they just go straight down because they haven't been working those. So it's so, so important. You know, yoga, I think, is awesome. Those are also slow twitch muscle fibers, but yoga will help you, obviously, with your balance, which is so, so important, and flexibility.
Stretching your muscles, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's so great for the mind and for overall stress reduction. But at the same time, definitely doing weight training, doing resistance training as people get older, not just walking. And really, there's three exercises that if, you know, if you, let's say you have, you know, somebody who's in their 60s, 70s, or 80s and like, well, I haven't done resistance training ever.
Yeah.
Then there's three things definitely to start with. And I encourage anybody who's listening, if you've got somebody in your life who's older, you can see that their mobility is slowing down, just have them do three things to start out with. Chest press, some type of a chest press where they can do it. You know, if obviously if they can do a push-up, that's great. If they can't, you can do it like a Nautilus chest press, either a squat or a leg press. Okay. And rows. So chest press, squat or leg press, and rows. If they do those three exercises, resistance training exercises, that's going to use most of those muscle groups that are needed to stay limber and strong and prevent those types of accidents as they get older.
That's amazing. I could sit here and talk to you for hours. I love learning stuff like this. There's a 60-year-old lady who I saw on Instagram who is shredded. Dude, ooh, I whistled. Who is shredded. And I'm and I'm telling you, man, I was like, I want to be her, dude. Like, she looked amazing. She had muscle tone at 60. Like, it was crazy. So, yeah, it is possible to,
There is a difference between health span and lifespan. Have you heard those terms?
Yeah, I've heard them, but I'm not in what you're about to say.
Yeah, so lifespan essentially is what traditional medicine is really good at. It's extending your life, you know? And so we're really good at taking somebody who's 60 or 70, they have multiple medical issues, and keeping them alive for a long time. And that's why our life expectancy keeps going up, because we're essentially kept alive by medications, by interventions, you know, and treatments and things. That is different than actual health span. The idea of health span is how long do you live where you are active and youthful and healthy and doing things that you want to do. And that's very different. And that's what we try to strive, you know, with kind of a lot of these alternative medicine ideas and a lot of the ideas in my book, is how do we extend your health span so that the ideal is that you live until you're like 100 years old. And even when you're 95, you're out. Yeah, and you are going on hikes, you're traveling, you're seeing the world, you're eating different foods, you're on very minimal medications, and you're just feeling energetic and great. And then something happens and you die. Like, versus the whole, that steady decline starting in your 50s where just every year you feel shittier and shittier and shittier. Like, that's kind of the way that we are taught now to age in our society. And so by focusing on these things, you know, eating right, taking some time to not eat for a little bit, you know, even if just 12 hours, you know, and then getting on those supplements and being super active, even trying things like meditation, all of that can really extend that health span and help you live healthier, longer, and happier for as long as possible.
I think meditation is huge also because it's such a stress reduction. And in our everyday lives that we have now, our lives are just so full of stress. It's like you have to put yourself first. And even if you have 10 minutes, just meditate and just try to decompress and just get, you know, I always visualize breathing in a certain color and then blowing out a certain color. And that's the stress that's coming out, and it's life changing.
It's amazing, because a lot of people think, oh, meditation, how boring. What can that do? You know, I'll tell you my story with meditation. Like, I was never really big on meditation. I knew it was good for us. But, you know, so the pandemic hits in March of 2020. I have a practice, a full medical practice. I've got 11 employees, and literally in the span of one morning, we come in and we're seeing patients, and at noon I close the office down because my employees were freaked out. You know, they're hearing these stories of like, oh my gosh, people are getting sick around us, blah, blah. And so I close it down at noon, and I promise my employees, I say, look, you know, I had just paid off all my taxes, because freaking March, you know, I'm like, and I say, look, I'm going to pay you guys. I don't know how long we're going to be closed for, but I will pay you. I will take care of you. You know, you guys go home and just stay healthy and all that. But I had no idea how I was going to do that. And so I volunteered for my local hospital. My wife's a physician. She's a pediatrician. And we both volunteered for our local hospital if they needed us, which, God forbid, like, if you've got COVID and you're like in the ICU and Dr. Yoon comes up to take care of you, like, you're screwed, because I don't remember how to do any of that stuff. But so thank God they never actually asked us to come in and help out. But that was such a stressful time, because here I am, like, I'm worried about my colleagues and my friends that were working in the hospital. Yeah. I'm worried about my own family, my parents and my in-laws who are, you know, almost 80 at that time. And then I worried about my patients and also my employees and, like, how am I going to pay my employees? So for the first time, I think, since I started my practice, probably for the first time since I tell you about that patient of mine who died, I would fall asleep fine at night. And then every night I'd wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning just with all these worries going on in my head. And so I was talking to my wife. I'm like, I can't, like, I wake up and I'm worried and I'm stressed. And, like, what do I do? And we started meditating together. Aww. Where we would just take literally 10 to 15 minutes and you could do a guided meditation. We did a lot of, like, Peloton meditation. Yep. Or sometimes I would do it by myself. And just like you said, just pay attention to my breathing. Like, try to cut everything out and then just pay attention to breathing in and out. And I tell you, Bunny, every day that I meditated, I slept all night. Aww. And those days where I'm like, oh, I don't have time, I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. 2 or 3 in the morning, I would wake up.
It was crazy
how it was a direct correlation. There are studies that show that meditation can help you to look younger. It can make changes in your brain to function more efficiently and effectively. It is crazy how just that simple act of just what you said, of just breathing in and out can reduce your stress and really help to improve your life.
It's wild because if you think about it, Buddhist monks have been meditating for decades. And I mean, look at them. You don't have to be a believer in Buddha to see that these men are, like, they don't age. They're literally, like, so peaceful, and they literally meditate every day. Like, it's just an amazing outlet. And if anybody wants to ever start meditating, there's I don't get paid for this, but there's an app called Insight Timer. Yeah, it's called Insight Timer. I've turned all my girls onto it.
Oh, really?
Mimi, and she uses it for her daughter too.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You guys can go on there, and if you've never meditated in your life, they have beginner meditations and everything like that. So
Now occasionally, you know, if I have anxieties, and every once in a while I have some just like, and I don't know why, or sometimes it's before surgery or something. Sometimes just in my car, I'll turn on a guided meditation for 10 minutes.
Absolutely.
And it's like you feel so much better afterwards.
So now, since I've learned breathing techniques, and I know a lot of people in my audience do suffer from anxiety, and they're always asking, like, what do you do? There is a meditation that you can do, and it's you breathe in for 6 seconds, you hold it for 6 seconds, and then you breathe out for 6 seconds. And it automatically snaps your nervous system out of fight or flight. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I could be in the middle of a panic attack just wanting to run, and I do that and it calms me immediately. It's just fascinating what breath work can do for you.
I think that there's so much that our society we have lost touch with. You know, even fasting was something that, you know, Christians, Muslims,
in the biblical times.
People have done it for centuries, but we stopped. You know, we just don't have time for it, you know.
Right.
And same thing with meditation. You know, this is stuff that we have done, you know, whatever religion you are, like, that's has been a part of it, you know, in its own way. And it's just, these are things that we lose track of that are such healthy practices to get back to it, you know. And it comes back to even the food. It's like we used to know what our food came from, you know. And there's this idea of food that is, you know, whole foods, not necessarily even plants, but whole foods versus ultra processed foods. And it's very simple, really, is it's when you're eating a food, do you know what plant or animal that food came from?
Right.
Does it look anything like its original state? And it's funny because I grew up in the middle of Michigan, in a tiny town in the middle of Michigan. And it was a weird dichotomy because my parents at home, we would eat traditional Korean foods. So it would be like, you know, rice and fish and veggies and garlic and kimchi and stuff like that.
Which is a really healthy diet.
Which is, and you know exactly what those foods are coming from. Like, it looks like that food.
Yeah.
And then I go out with my friends. We go to McDonald's and KFC and Burger King and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was this weird dichotomy. And now the funny thing is we've kind of come full circle. And, you know, I've got 2 teenagers. And I grew up, when I was their age, I was always at fast food places. And now my kids, it's weird because they go out with their friends. They get poke bowls. You know, they get like sushi. They get, it's like crazy. They get like Korean food and stuff. And it's good because there is, I think, a group, especially I think the younger generation are more understanding of like what's going on with their food and everything nowadays.
They're more woke. And I honestly believe that it is because of social media. Because, you know, back in the day when we were kids, it was like we didn't have social media. We only knew like what our parents taught us or what we saw on commercials or TV. Whereas now these kids have so much opportunity at their fingertips and they, you know, they can research. And, you know, so it's kind of, even though social media can be the devil's playground, it's also a catch-22 because it is informative and it, you know, is, I think, guiding the youth in a better way than we were guided as children. Speaking of food, if somebody wanted to, say, change their life after hearing this podcast and start, you know, a diet, what would be a typical day of eating for somebody who wants to start eating healthier and not eating fast food?
So the first thing that I would recommend, so let's start about what to try to reduce. Okay. So the great ager of our skin food-wise is sugar. Sugar is the number one cause of premature aging of the skin. And it does that because the sugar will actually bond to the collagen in our skin. So I mentioned earlier that the collagen makes up 70 to 80% of our skin. And when you ingest sugar, sugar will actually bond to that collagen, those logs of that log cabin, and will cause those logs to become kinked. And the combination of when that the sugar and the collagen hybrid, the connections of that are called advanced glycation end products, or AGEs. Kind of makes sense, AGEs, you know, because they prematurely age you. And so sugar can do that by literally physically bonding to the collagen of your skin, causing your skin to feel rougher, to have more wrinkles, to be drier, and essentially more aged. It also increases, when you get sugar spikes, you get insulin spikes. Insulin spikes causes chronic inflammation. And chronic inflammation is one of the great agers of our skin, and sugar, once again, being kind of the big thing. Now, it's important to differentiate acute inflammation from chronic inflammation, because there are a lot of treatments that we do that are that create acute inflammation. You can get laser treatment. You can get microneedling. You can get chemical peels. These all create acute inflammation. And when you cause acute inflammation or you damage the collagen of the skin in a very short-term way, when the collagen heals, it gets tighter. Yeah. And that's why your skin gets...
I love all those, by the way.
That's why your skin gets tighter after these treatments.
Right.
But chronic inflammation is a different thing. Right. And so sugar can create chronic inflammation by chronic insulin spikes, and then that can cause premature aging as well.
It
so,
also leads to autoimmune diseases as well.
Well, when you have... You can get type 2 diabetes because essentially when you're getting so much sugar and the insulin keeps going up and down, up and down, eventually your tissues don't respond to the insulin so well. And if it's not responding to the insulin, your blood sugars go up, and then that's when you eventually get insulin resistance and then type 2 diabetes, and then that leads to all sorts of other problems. And so reducing the amount of sugar that you eat is the first step that I encourage people to consider, you know. You and I, we have a lot of our followers that live in the quote-unquote flyover states. You know, I'm from Michigan. You know, you're Tennessee. I have a lot of my followers that live in small towns. They follow me on, you know, TikTok or on Instagram. And they're not living in Miami or LA or New York. And for some of them, just the act of, hey, you know, going from three cans of soda pop a day to one or two is a big deal. And so I encourage people who are listening, you know, whether you're a follower of mine or a bunny, is that just to reduce some of the amount of sugar you drink. So if you have three cans of soda pop, try to reduce it to two. Maybe substitute that other one for a can of kombucha. You know, something a little bit different, or a green tea or something, or even
or
just plain water.
Yeah,
just water.
Water. I'm not sponsored by them, but this is the best water in the world, Mountain Valley Water. I love them.
Because that, just making those little changes can be huge deals. And I really encourage people who are listening that if you can do that, be proud of yourself, because those are big steps towards that goal. The second thing I encourage people to do is try to reduce the amount of ultra-processed foods because those, once again, they contain free radicals, and then free radicals can cause damage to your skin by this process called oxidation. So taking those two huge groups of food out, I think, is so, so important, a reducing amount that you can eat of that. And then what you want to replace that with are colorful fruits and vegetables. We talked about the antioxidants in them, healthy sources of protein. And so I'm a big fan of grass-fed beef, of pastured pork, pastured chicken, wild-caught fish, sustainably caught fish, you know, that are that you have vetted, okay? That's good, too.
And how do you feel about tilapia? Isn't it man-made?
So tilapia, there are some studies showing, so there are omega-3 fats and omega-6 fats. So when we look at all the different fats that we can eat, there are different kinds. So some fats are 100% we know are good for you.
Right.
Omega-3 fatty acids, which are the main fat that we know is healthy for us in fish, That's the big thing.
Right.
Omega-6 fatty acids are called polyunsaturated fatty acids. These are the fats that are in things like margarine, in like seed oils. And then some oils contain a combination of both. So like olive oil, which in general is really good for you, contains both omega-3 and omega-6. And the goal you want to is to maximize the amount of omega-3s and overall minimize omega-6, because we get way too much of that in our general, in our society.
Right.
And so in general, what you want to do then is eat those healthy sources of fats, those healthy sources of protein, okay, and then the healthy fruits and vegetables, and then trying to get rid of some of those ultra-processed types of things.
Gotcha. And not all salads are good for you. I learned that the hard way whenever I was dieting is there's some salads that have more calories and more fat in them. Like when if you eat a salad, you have to like really pay attention to what's in it. You can't just be like, oh, I eat salads every day, because that could be.
Yeah, I mean, if you douse it in a bunch of dressing and then you throw a bunch of bacon bits on it. So, I mean, it's the same thing with coffee. You know, coffee is a great drink in general because it's filled with antioxidants.
You can't have it though.
But when you throw a bunch of cream and sugar and you know, you mix it up with all these syrups and stuff like that, you take, you know, what essentially is a really a good healthy drink and you make it a, you know, a sugar bomb essentially.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so really it's what you do sometimes with these basic foods that make a big difference.
Absolutely. I could just pick your brain all day. Do you have time to answer a couple questions
of course.
From some of the people
I'm
on my
happy
Patreon?
To talk about that. We can talk about anything plastic surgery,
anti-aging.
To,
they have so many questions about plastic surgery. So I figured I would let you answer their questions. These are for everybody on my Patreon. They are so excited that you're here.
Oh, and, thank you.
They actually came with a bunch of really good questions. So we'll answer a few of them and then we'll move on to a couple other topics. Is it healthier for a fat transfer instead of a breast augmentation? And would you, as a doctor, consider 48 too old to have said procedure if there isn't any major health issues?
Okay, so breast implants, I'm happy to talk about that and breast implant illness. I know you've talked about your experience with implants and stuff.
Yeah.
So I've got definitely an opinion on that. As far as fat grafting to the breasts, a lot of people are talking about that now as kind of like a natural alternative. And as a surgery, it is in general very safe to perform. Essentially what you do is you liposuction fat from your hips or your thighs or your tummy, and then we purify the fat and then inject it into the breasts. And as far as immediate complications, it's usually pretty low risk. The thing that a lot of plastic surgeons, and I don't know of anybody talking about this but me, honestly, like I have not heard anybody but me, so maybe I don't know and everybody else does, but when you think about it theoretically, okay, one in nine women will get breast cancer in their lifetime. So the breast essentially is a cancer-prone organ. As sad as it is, that's the truth. We know over the last 10 to 15 years that our fat is chock full of stem cells. Stem cells are cells that are so young that the belief is that you put them into a body part and they will essentially turn into cells for that body part. And that's the reason why it's exciting for things like cancer. If you have to have an organ removed, the idea is that, hey, I wonder if stem cells can help to remake that organ essentially. So theoretically, then what happens if you take a cancer-prone organ like a breast and you inject it with a ton of stem cells haphazardly all around the organ? What if, for example, you are 47, she is?
She said 48.
48, okay. Yes. And let's say she has a family history of breast cancer. Let's say she has a cluster of dysplastic cells, meaning cells that are not normal, that could eventually create a cancer. But there's so few of them, and they're not that aggressive, that they won't turn into a cancer until she turns 140 years old. But now you inject a bunch of stem cells around those cells. Those stem cells then will turn into the cells that they are around. Is it possible that now she develops a breast cancer when she turns 60 or 65?
Oh my goodness.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And we don't know the answer to that.
Right.
And unfortunately, we won't know the answer to that for decades.
Right.
Because these operations have just been getting popular over the last few years.
Yeah.
And when I have brought this up with other plastic surgeon colleagues of mine, they kind of brush it off. They're like, well, you know, it's a safe operation. You know, we can't tell the future.
Right.
But these are things we need to know about. And
absolutely.
So for me, I do fat grafting to the breasts in rare cases. When patients have had, typically, let's say they've had implants and they've had some major complication and they feel that they, you know, that they don't look right, and we try to reconstruct them essentially.
Yeah.
But you really want to weigh those risks versus benefits. And it really, it's looking at plastic surgery from a more holistic perspective. You know, I have this term called the America's Holistic Plastic mm-hmm. Surgeon. People are like, what does that mean? Well, this is one of those things. It's like not just focusing on the cosmetic result, but how does this affect your whole body? You know, because right. it does you no good if we make your breasts bigger with fat and then you develop breast cancer 15 years mm-hmm. from now that you never would have had. And we just didn't understand it because we never actually thought about this in a more holistic whole body perspective.
Right. Also, another thing about getting just fat transfer and the difference between an augmentation and fat transfer, because I have had my implants taken out. So if I were to go and get fat transfer, it doesn't create that bubble on the top. And I think a lot of people don't realize that when you just only get fat transfer in your boobs, it's going to fill out more of the bottom and like not have the roundness.
You can't create roundness with that. It's just that you can maybe get about a half a cup because about half that fat's going to disappear.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless it's me. My body loves fat. I had fat transferred to my ass and I swear it keeps growing.
It does. But usually it's if you gain weight. Like I had one patient who I had put fat in her lips. Mm-hmm. And then she got pregnant maybe a couple years later. Yeah. And she was like, she messaged me. She's laughing. She's like, oh my gosh, my lips are so huge.
Oh no. Who knew that your lips could grow like that? But if you think about it, could the stem cells?
Well, it's fat. You know, you put fat somewhere and when you gain weight, the fat cells get larger.
Oh my goodness. That is hilarious.
Yeah.
What is the scariest thing you've ever seen during a surgery? Any paranormal spookies?
You know, I can tell you this wasn't scary, but something that was, I guess, kind of in a paranormal, but this is not like the spooky thing.
Right.
So I had a patient of mine. This is a story actually out of my book, Playing God. But this is a woman who came to see me. She was in her early 60s. Mm-hmm. She was really overweight and she had a cane. So she walks into my office on a cane, barely able to walk. Mm-hmm. And I took a look at her chart and she is like has every medical problem known to man. Like she was diabetic. She had had stents placed from having a heart attack. She had was on blood thinners and like everything you can think of. It's what we call in medicine a train wreck. And it's not a nice term, but this is what we call it. If you go to the ER and like, oh, this person's a train wreck, you know, oh, geez, they've got every medical issue.
Right.
And so she comes to see me and I was like, well, what can I do for you? And she said, I had a tummy tuck done by another surgeon and everything fell apart. And she said, my tummy is a mess. I'm in so much pain that I can barely walk. And she got tears in her eyes. And she's like, Dr. Yoon, I need you to help me. She said, I've been to 10 or 12 or some other plastic surgeons and everybody has turned me down and you're my last hope. So I said, well, what's going on? And she said, so I had this operation by this other doctor. They removed the skin from my tummy and then everything turned black. My tissue died and I was in the hospital for months. And now everything is scarred in and it's just so painful. And she got tears in her eyes and she said, Dr. Yoon, I can't even play with my granddaughter. She goes, the one thing I want to do is be able to play with my granddaughter again. And so I look at her information and I tell her, I'm like, look, you know, you've got so many medical issues. They probably turned you down because you're at such high risk. Like you can die from this operation.
Right.
And she goes, my life is over right now as it is. Like, what am I worried about?
Oh my gosh.
You know, somebody like that comes in and you look at all these things and you're just like, dang, you know, if I were to bring this person to surgery, she could die on the operating table or she could have a bleeding complication afterwards. There's so many things that can go wrong. But this was one of those handful of times as a physician where I go over all this stuff and I look at it and I just have this sense of assuredness that everything was going to be okay and that this was something that I had to do for her. Although like the scientific part of me, you know, the rational part of my head is like, say no, don't operate on her.
Right.
This is a big mistake.
That's scary.
But there was that part of me that was like, I've got to do this for her. And for some reason, I know it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
So her surgery, so I tell her, look, I say, look, you know, I'm willing to do this operation for you, but I need to tell you, like, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I can't guarantee your result. And I said, you know, we can try to get your insurance to pay for it. I don't even know if they're going to pay for it. And I said, well, but let's do this. I feel like I need to help you. So the night before her surgery, I don't do this much, but I prayed for her and I prayed that the surgery was going to go fine and that she was going to do fine.
You're such a sweet
and
doctor.
I get to the operating room. We do this operation and it goes so smoothly. Like it literally took like 2.5 hours, removed all the scar tissue. And she just flew in her post-operative recovery. And I knew at the time when I was operating, as things were going along, like I didn't feel alone. Like I felt like I was being guided.
Right.
So the funny thing is she comes back a few weeks later. I think I went on vacation or something, so I hadn't seen her. And she came back a few weeks later, no cane. She has a cake that she baked for me. And she's like, and she knew that her insurance had rejected the claim, that they weren't going to pay for her surgery. And she's like, look, I'm really sorry. I don't have any money to pay you. She goes, but here's a cake that I baked for you. And I tell you, Bunny, I have a rule that whenever my patients bring in food to my office, I will not eat it because I don't know what their kitchen looks like. They could have Chachi like standing on their counters and like.
You sound like me. I'm the same way. If I don't know where it came from, I'm not eating
like,
it.
Oh, okay.
What if they decided to make like, you know, weed brownies or something like that? Yeah,
so I'm like, oh, okay. You know, that's really nice. It's like my usual, like, oh, thanks. And so she tells him, she's like, Dr. Yoon, she goes, you know, she goes, why did you do it? Why'd you do this operation? Everybody else turned me down. And I said, you know, I just had this feeling that this was the right thing to do, that you needed my help. And that I wasn't alone doing this, that somebody was guiding me. And so so she says, you know, and she's like, gives me a piece of the cake. And I'm like, I finally like, okay, fine, I'll eat it. So she was like, she thanked me. And she said, I was so excited. I was hanging out with my granddaughter last night and I'm able to play with her again. And she just thanked me for it. And it's like, aww. I mean, so sometimes every once in a while as a physician, there are these handful of patients through your lives that, you know, through your career that mm-hmm. just mean everything. And it has nothing to do with the money. It has nothing to do with like, oh, this fine result that I'm so proud of. It's just like you change somebody's life and it just means everything.
It's chicken soup for the soul.
It's that type of thing.
Yeah.
Just not quite so cheesy.
Yeah. I love that. That's a beautiful story.
Oh, thank you.
Tummy tuck or lipo for fluff that won't go away after having kids?
Depends on wear and skin quality. So tummy tucks remove excess skin, typically below the belly button, above the pubic area. Mm. But you trade it for a hip-to-hip scar and a scar around the belly button, mm-hmm. okay? There's no other way around it. Like, there's no secret to it. It's just you cut that extra skin and fat out, then you pull the skin down, and then you trade it for those scars. Lipo is removal of fat. And if you've had multiple kids and you're talking about the tummy, most likely you're talking a tummy tuck. If you haven't had kids and you've got love handles or something like that, and your skin is pretty tight, then that's what lipo can help with. So tummy tuck is for excess skin of the tummy. Lipo does not do that. It, if anything, can make it worse.
Right. Yeah. So if you go and you get lipo and you have, you know, a lot of fat right there and they pull it out, the skin can hang. So you're just going to end up having to get a tummy tuck anyways.
Yeah. So if you're unhappy with your tummy after having kids, most of the time, lipo is not going to be a good solution. Most of the time, you're looking at a tummy tuck.
Mm.
Yeah.
What is the wildest request you've ever had for a surgery?
Oh, you know, I can tell you a wild story if you want.
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay. I mean, I get wild requests, but this was like a wild story. I had a patient who came in to see me. I literally was in practice for 4 months. Mm. So I'm this new plastic surgeon in Michigan. I thought I was kind of like, in my head, I was trying to present myself like as a Beverly Hills big shot because I trained out in Beverly Hills. And now I'm in like Rochester Hills, Michigan, this small town. You know, at the same time, inside, I knew, like, I'm brand new, I'm green, like, I've not treated people by myself before, and I was nervous. But on the surface, it's like, oh, yeah, sure, you know, I'm a real plastic surgeon, I've trained in Beverly Hills.
I got this.
So this woman comes in, and she had had a facelift and a brow lift done by a different plastic surgeon, a guy who was really not thought of well in my community as kind of a chop shop type guy.
Oh.
And so she had some areas where a little bit of loose skin here, her brows had dropped again and stuff. And she's like, can you fix me or can you make things better? So I'm like, and she goes, I used to be a model. And she was now in her late 50s. She goes, I used to be a model and now I'm just feeling like I've lost it. And can you please help me? And I felt bad for her. Mm. So I said, you know what, let me give you a discount and let's do this operation. And it was a brow lift and a facelift. And I brought her to surgery and the surgery went perfectly. So she comes back to see me at 1 week, and she was happy at 1 week, and then at 3 weeks she was happy. And then all of a sudden I get a call from her a couple weeks later saying that I botched her and that she is going to go see some other surgeons to see what can be done to fix it. So now, like, I'm literally 4 months in practice. I'd never had an unhappy patient before. I didn't know what to do with it. And so I call her up, and I say, hey, what's going on? She goes, you botched me. I'm trying to find somebody to fix this. And so I said, well, please just come back to the office. Let's take a peek at it. Because last time I saw her, she looked great. Like, healing was fine. So I said, just come back to the office and let's just take a peek and see what's going on. You know, let's see what I can do to help you. So she comes into the office. She comes barging into, I schedule her at the end of the day because I'm thinking, like, I think she's mad and I don't want her to scare other patients away.
Right.
So you always schedule them at the end of the day so that they don't, like, you know, ruin the rest of your day and scare everybody away. So she comes in. She barges in the door. And she is pissed off. Her face is bright red, and she starts screaming at me. And she's like, you botched me. You botched me. You made me look oriental. And I'm like, Oriental? She goes, you made me look like you. And I'm like, what? And like, she's Caucasian, you know? And like, no, she doesn't look Asian. And so I go, well, I go, let's settle down. She goes, I saw this other doctor and he told me that I'm a train wreck now, that you completely botched me. And I'm like, I'm actually really good friends with this doctor. There's no way he would ever say that. And I don't tell her this, but I go, what can I do to try to make it up for you? Like, let's see what we can do together. And she goes, you better pay me $500,000 or I'm going to run you out of town. And I go, I don't have, like, I was literally $200,000 in debt.
Right.
Like,
Did she look Asian?
No, she looked fine. And she was healing fine. Looking at her incisions, everything was healing fine. She had body dysmorphia. What she looked at and saw in the mirror was different than what everybody else saw.
Oh.
So I'm like, I go, look, I don't have $500,000. Like, I'm literally 200 grand in debt myself. And that's my debt. My wife had another 200 grand. So we're like almost $500,000 the hole as it is.
Gosh.
And so I go, I don't have that money. And she goes, $150,000. You pay me $150,000 and I will forget that you destroyed my face. And I go, look, you actually look fine. Like, let's talk this over. And then she goes, carte blanche. Carte blanche, I get whatever I want by whatever surgeon I want for the next 3 years and you pay for it. And I'm like, I mean, this isn't like a...
She's literally negotiating with you.
So I go, look, I can't do that. Then she goes, if you don't do that, then I'm going to send you back to LA where the only people who allow you to operate on them are the whores. And she starts running through my office, literally screaming, the whores, the whores, the whores. She goes up to my big window and like a horror movie, she's like, I'm a monster, looking at the window, screaming at the top of her lungs. And so I'm like, oh my. And now I knew that she was going to be unhappy. So I actually wrote her a check for what she paid me and what her hospital fees were. Like, it's like more than what I made, like what she paid me and a lot more. Because before she came in, I had this feeling like this is going to go bad. And I had a release for her where if she were to sign the release, then like it releases me of indemnity of any responsibility. Yeah. So I say, look, I go, I've got a check for the cost of your operation. I go, this is money that you paid the hospital too. I go, I will give you this check if you sign this release. And she goes, she looks at it, she goes, this is all you're offering me? And she goes, I will destroy you. I've got good friends in town and we're gonna send you back to where you came from. And she leaves and slams the door and leaves. My employees are like hiding under their desks and they're like, oh my gosh. So I call up my old mentor in LA who he has seen freaking everything. I remember he told me back in the day, he said, I had a patient of mine. He goes, yeah, I had a patient of mine who was stalking me, would actually be in bushes in front of my house and looking through my windows. And so I'm like, well, he had this person, like that person was nuts. So maybe he knows what to do. So I call him up and I say, hey doc, I'm like, this woman, she's like going crazy. I think she's going to like, she actually threatened to hit me with her car at one point. And like, she's going to like, I think she's going to attack me. And I go, what did you do to get rid of that patient? And he goes, oh, simple. I hired some guys to beat her up.
Oh.
And I'm like, I'm not going to hire people. And I don't even know who to hire to call anyway. Like, not that I would hire somebody to beat up a patient of mine. So I'm like, okay, thanks for nothing. And he's like, tell me what happens. This is exciting. And I hang up on him. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, what do I do? And like my employees, like their eyes are huge. Like all of a sudden, bang, 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 bang. And she's at the door. And my employees are like, she probably has a gun. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And they're like, don't open the door. And I'm like, I kind of like a ninja, I like creep up to where the window is. And like, I look around the corner and like, I'm looking like there's no gun or anything.
Yeah.
So I go up to the door, I open it up. She barges in. Takes a check that I had put on the front desk, puts it in her pocket, signs the release, walks up to me, and she goes, this is not over. And she walks out the door. And so now the next day I had an operation. It was actually a breast reconstruction on a woman who had these huge breasts, and she'd had cancer and this and that. It was going to be one of the most difficult, probably the most difficult operation I was going to do up to that point in my career.
Poor thing.
I could not sleep overnight, and I called her up. It was like 5 in the morning. And I go, I'm really sorry. I said, I can't operate on you today. She goes, well, that's okay. And she's so nice. She goes, we'll do this later. And I go, no. I go, I don't think I can operate on you. And for months, I had like lost all sense of like confidence in myself because like what did I do to this woman? So a couple weeks go by and I'm at the hospital treating a patient and I get a call from my office and they're like, you need to come back. That patient's mom has left you a message. So I go, what is the message? And the message is, you need to call me. My daughter is suicidal. So now I'm like, fuck. This now my what happened? Like my patient's gonna freaking kill herself because of this freaking facelift that I did on her. And like, what do? I call one of my best friends, a psychiatrist, and I say, Brian, like, this is what's going on. Like, what do I do? And he goes, you need to tell her mom to call the police and send her to the hospital immediately. Because, you know, if she's suicidal, you've got to do that. So I'm like, okay. So I call her mom up and I'm like, hey, this is Dr. Yoon. I'm calling, you know, you left me a message about your daughter. And you said she is suicidal. Is that true? And she goes, what? Suicidal? What are you talking about? And I go, well, this is what message was left. And she goes, no, that's a figure of speech. She needs more money to pay for what you did to her. And
oh, I'm like, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. Like, this is an 80-year-old woman, 85-year-old woman trying to blackmail me for more money.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm like, look, I'm sorry. This conversation's over. And like, that was the end of it. But
and you never heard from them again?
You know, I referred her initially when she called before I saw her and that whole crazy episode happened. Mm-hmm. And I gave her some names of some local surgeons who are much older than me who've been very established.
Right.
And so I ran into one of them at a meeting a couple years later. And he's like, hey, Tony. I'm like, oh, hey, how's it going? And he's like, you know that one patient? And I'm like, oh, I know who you're talking about. And he goes, she's effing crazy.
Oh, my God. Like, so she was just looking for a paycheck.
And I think that she saw this young, naive, like, nice surgeon. Aww. And was like and got a nice result. I think part of it may be BDD, like by dysmorphia, and part of it is like, I'm gonna take this guy for everything he has. And like, now
gosh,
I would handle that experience very differently in my career. Like, I would never let somebody talk to me that way
ever.
But at the time I was literally 4 months in practice, and like, I was so green and just wanting to make everybody happy and develop this little practice, and it's like, so traumatic.
I hate that. I would think being a plastic surgeon, you would deal with everybody that comes in there has body dysmorphia. I know
it's
I have
like
body dysmorphia.
At least 10% of patients. Yeah. And it's tough. It can be really hard.
Crazy.
Yeah. But, you know, in the end, it's the problem with body dysmorphia. I mean, you say, look, I have body dysmorphia. Mm-hmm. The fact that you say that means you probably really don't have much of it. And,
really?
And you may have some of it. Because one huge thing with body dysmorphia is that people who have it don't believe they have it. You know, and so somebody will say, hey, they've got like a little bump on their nose. And for you and I, we may see them and go, oh, there's a little bump there. Their nose looks fine. But to them, that bump is the size of Mount Rushmore.
Right.
And they don't understand why we can't see how horrible their nose looks. And so a lot of times then they'll undergo surgery after surgery after surgery to correct a perceived problem that was never even there in the first place.
Wow.
And they don't even, and for them, the reality is very different. You know, they see things that we literally don't see. Like, it's their reality.
They tell me I have body dysmorphia all the time.
You think so, Mimi?
You feel like answering a few more questions?
Oh yeah, of course. I won't be so long-winded on the next
one. You're fine. I love it. I love learning about this stuff and listening to it. It's just fascinating to me. Like, I've always wanted to ask a plastic surgeon, what is it like? I don't know if this is too graphic, but what is it like the first time you cut into a body?
So we do that in in medical school and residency.
Yeah.
And it, you know, the good thing is that you're not the first one to do it.
Right.
And so you're assisting.
Right.
I think it's the first time it's your patient is when it's really scary.
Right. That's what, yeah.
You know, because being a resident, there was always backup. You know, like when we did surgery in residency, you had the older surgeon basically saying, like, cut here. I remember the first time they actually, I was operating with the surgeon. I was an intern, and I was doing, essentially it was a hernia.
Right.
And that's like one of the basic operations. Mm-hmm. And I'd never started an operation before. And we're standing there over the patient, and he goes, Tony, get started. And I had a clamp in my hand. Or no, I had nothing in my hand. He goes, Tony, get started. And I had never started an operation before. So I'm like, and I grabbed the clamp off of the Mayo stand, which is the stand that the scrub techs have. And he looks at me like, you idiot, are you going to make a cut with a clamp? And I'm like, oh, no. Like, oh, can I have a scalpel, please? So you got to start in somewhere.
That's what I mean. Like, I could never do it. I would probably pass out.
No, because like, it's baby steps, you know? I mean,
right.
Our training, you know, for me, my training started when I was a medical student. And literally you're talking, I mean, I did
my
6 years.
My husband is FaceTiming, and I know he wants to say hi to you. So hold on 1 second.
Hello?
Hello, Jelly Roll. Big fan, my friend. Big fan.
I'm a big fan.
Oh man, that's an honor.
I love you. We're in the middle of the pod, but I told him that I know you were calling just to say hi to him.
Sorry. I knew you were in the middle of the pod.
Love you. Goodbye. Sorry. So I just know that he was calling to say hi to you.
It's all good. No, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's baby steps.
Yeah.
You know, I remember back, you know, now it's like you start from literally doing the tiniest little procedures. I remember the first time I did a spinal tap on a little baby. And I was so nervous as a medical student, but the attending pediatrician was just so gentle and reassuring that you learn these things of how to help teach.
Right.
And it gets to, you know, and I think the big thing a lot of surgeons forget is that we were once at that beginning stage too, you know?
Right.
So occasionally I'll have residents come work with me and stuff like that. And I think a lot of surgeons forget what it was like when you're at the bottom of the totem pole, you know,
right.
And my third book was called Playing God. And it's this idea that surgeons have of this God complex where they feel that they are just so superior sometimes to everybody else because they lose track of where they started, you know?
Right.
And for me, I look at that medical student that was like so excited to do a spinal tap and then like so nervous because here's this little kid, this little baby, you know, all the way up to now where it's like, I've had people say, thank you for saving my life. And, you know, and I've cut people's skin open and pull out. It's like, when you think about it, like, how arrogant do you have to be to think that you can cut somebody open, especially in plastic surgery, where they're completely healthy and you make them unhealthy for a period of time, expecting that they're going to be healthy again.
Right.
And that's how you make your living? Like,
plastic
how arrogant
surgery is
does it have to be?
It's beautiful, but it's so barbaric at the same time.
It can be.
I had high-def vaser lipo, and then I also had fat transferred to my ass, and I'm telling you, I don't know. The healing for that was brutal.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, it was crazy. And it's fascinating to know that you can cut somebody open, take stuff out, sew them up again, and then the outcome is absolutely gorgeous.
Well, it's like I said earlier, this idea of auto-rejuvenation. It's your body has innate regenerative abilities to rejuvenate itself. Like our body wants to heal itself. It wants to be healthy. It wants to be vibrant and youthful, you know, and it's like you do things like that, you traumatize your body and it heals. And within a few weeks, it's like, wow, I'm back to exercising and stuff like that. It's just, once again, we need to ideally give it the abilities, the not the abilities, but the tools to do that and the environment to do that.
Right.
And that's what I think is so missing in a lot of today's lifestyle. And that's one of the big things I really bring up in the book. And, you know, how do you do that? Like, what tools do you give your body to get you feeling young and healthy and vibrant? You know, I think that there are so many people today that go through life not knowing how amazing they can feel.
Absolutely.
You know, they don't know that all that gluten that they're eating potentially is causing them to feel real crummy.
Yes.
And unless they do what you did, go on an elimination diet, get rid of some of those things, it's like we have this thing in the book called the 21-day jumpstart, where in 3 weeks or 21 days, basically what we do is we put them on a collagen-supporting healthy diet. We start them on intermittent fasting weeks 2 and 3, not week 1, because we want to kind of ease them into it.
Right.
We put them on certain supplements and skincare. And we do it just for 21 days. And the changes that we saw were incredible.
Amazing.
Once again, giving your body just the right tools. We had people, and it's not like a facelift. Like, if you got jowls, you do a 21-day jumpstart. After you do a 21-day jumpstart, it's not going to get rid of jowls or loose skin or whatever. But we had people where they were actual strangers would approach them on the street and say, what are you doing with your skin? Because I need to do what you're doing. Or they go out to dinner with their friends, not knowing that they're doing this jumpstart, and their friends would be like, wow, your skin looks amazing. Are you doing something different? Like, what's going on here? And it's just allowing your body to use those natural regenerative abilities to, you know, don't get in the way of it, you know,
and let your body
give it those things.
Just be. I'm excited to read your books. I can't wait. Now that I know that you have 4, I'm really excited because I'm an information junkie. I always want to consume. So I'm super excited about that. It says, I have factor 5 Leiden clotting disorder with previous DVT/PE.
Oof.
Would I ever be allowed to have elective surgery?
The answer is yes. So what she says is she's got a clotting disorder, and the fact that she's had a DVT or a PE is a big deal.
In your leg, right?
Yes.
Pulmonary embolism, right?
Yes. It's a PE is a pulmonary embolism. A DVT is a deep vein thrombosis where you get a clot in your deep veins. That can kill you.
Yes.
When you look at people who die from plastic surgery, then the most common cause is a DVT, a deep vein thrombosis, a clot in your leg that eventually goes to your lungs, being a PE, and then people die from that.
Goodness.
And the ways to prevent that would be, number one, to walk after surgery. Number two, to have a less length of an operation, a shorter operation. And so for her, having that risk, most doctors, like if she came to see me and wanted a high-risk operation like a tummy tuck, I would probably say, Depending on what her condition was, if it was really purely cosmetic, it wasn't that bad, then I would really talk to her, like, are these risks worth the benefits?
Right.
Because you can put a patient like that on blood thinners and help lower the risk of that happening, mm-hmm. but then you increase the risk of bleeding, okay, because you put them on blood thinners
right.
afterwards. So you can technically do it, but do you want to go through that? That's going to be the big question. So it comes down to what operation you're thinking of, and then is it worth taking the risk of going on blood thinners for that operation?
Right.
And so let's say if her situation, she's like, look, Dr. Yoon, I've had four kids. I've got skin that's hanging down to my mid-thigh. It chafes. I've got infections and stuff like that. Then it may be worth taking that risk. If it's, well, I kind of want implants because I'm a C and I want to be a D, then maybe it's not really worth taking that risk, you know, because do you want to potentially die from that? And
no.
So really it's weighing those risk benefits that's most important.
It's a great answer, though, for sure. Gosh, I have pulmonary. I just ripped my calf muscle on Halloween. It was the worst thing ever. And I kept telling everybody, I was like, I'm going to get a blood clot. I know it. I was like so scared because, you know, I've never had that type of injury.
Yeah,
it was,
you got to walk. That's the big thing.
I did for sure. And I got a compression sock and I still worked out even with the injury. Like I was like, I'm determined to not do this. What is the most common procedure that you do? And also what is your least favorite procedure to do?
So the most common procedure in my office is Botox. I mean, we are injecting Botox all day long in my office.
Love it.
I've got five injectors. Yeah, I mean, it's great. And I've injected myself here before. I just got Daxxify a few months ago, which is believed to be a longer lasting version of Botox.
Mm-hmm. Is it like Dysport?
Dysport is more, so Dysport, Botox, and Daxxify, you get the same result. The idea really is that the Daxxify will last longer. And there's little minor tweaks in between. Like Dysport is more of a softer result. Usually a lot of people believe it spreads a little bit more.
Gotcha.
Daxxify is mainly longer lasting.
Gotcha.
And so in the office, the number one thing is going to be Botox. As far as procedure surgery, my most common is breast implant surgery, is breast augmentation. Least favorite operation, honestly, was rhinoplasty. I used to do a lot of rhinoplasties and I just never liked it.
Brutal.
So I stopped doing them.
Why did you not like doing them?
So I trained with them and I saw a lot of just nightmare like revisions that were not of my patients, but that you try to fix. And it's a really hard operation to get.
And it's
a
like the center
happy.
Of someone's face, you know?
Yeah. And the thing I didn't like about rhinoplasty is that you could do such a good job. It's so tedious and, it's so tedious. And the problem is you could get scar tissue that can develop that is not under your control that can really impact your result. Because just a millimeter of scar tissue on a nose can be visible from a normal speaking distance.
Wow.
And so because of that, some of the result is not in your hands. And so of all the surgeries we do cosmetically, rhinoplasty or nose jobs has the highest revision rate where people want to go back to surgery to fix it up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have your own operating room, which I do not, then you get in this really uncomfortable situation where if you get your nose done and you're unhappy with it and you want it to get revised, who pays for it?
Right.
You know, I could do it for free, but then who pays for the anesthesia in the operating room? You know, and then you get into that situation. Well, geez, if I think it's a good result, but the patient doesn't.
Right.
Do I then pay the bill for that to try to make them happy? Do they pay for it? Like, it just, ugh.
You're and such a nice doctor.
I just always felt bad. And so I just never liked doing
it. Most doctors would tell people to go F themselves.
yes. I've never told a patient to go F themselves. I've wanted to sometimes. Usually the people I want to say that to are like the husbands or boyfriends of the patients.
Right.
They, I often want to say that to. But yeah. Not the patient so much.
Do you get that a lot? Like the boyfriends come in there and they're just like putting their input on what they want their girlfriends.
It drives me nuts. Yeah, if you see my social media,
I've seen that.
A lot of what I do is because like you just sometimes sit there and like, I mean, it baffles you on what some of these guys are doing. Like I had a patient just not that long ago who had a complication from another surgeon and came to see me. This patient was literally lied when they said, oh, you know, I want to get a consultation. It was for breast implants.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get a consultation for breast implants. We got her in. And then she came in. She had a tummy tuck done by me before, which had healed fine. And she had surgery literally 3 weeks before she came to see me.
Oh, my gosh.
She had implants put in by a different doctor. And she was really unhappy. No, she had her implants taken out. That's what it was. She had her implants taken out. She had an explant. And it was a mess.
Mm.
And so she came in to see me and she's like, and the consult was for an explant, but they didn't tell my office that it was 3 weeks that she had it by another doctor. So I'm looking at her and it was like when you do explant surgery, And you're essentially, these are taking implants out of somebody. Now, if you've got, like, you know, you had large breasts, and so you take your implants out and your breasts just look smaller and they look flatter. But if you don't have enough breast tissue and you take implants out, it can look like a balloon that deflated and but stayed stretched out essentially. So that's what
they fluff back up though after it See, mine fluffed up a lot after, I'd have to say, 6 months to a year. My boobs look like they did when I was 19. Like they were like, maybe I was a lucky one.
I think
but
you were. Yeah, because usually that's not the case.
Yeah. I mean, everybody thinks I still have implants.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably just naturally you've got large breasts. And I do think that sometimes the body wants to be a certain size.
Right.
No matter what you do. But this patient was a mess. And I was just like, and it was 3 weeks out. And she's like, what do I do? And I said, look, the only way for us to fix this, honestly, is to put smaller implants back in and then heal, give it 6 months to heal, then we'll take those out and do this the right way. I go, that's the only way I can fix you. The other surgeon recommended in fat grafting, but she had so many of these folds in her breasts where things had deflated and had scarred in or were starting to scar in. I'm like, I can't fix that. We have to put the implants back in, reinflate you, and then we'll do it the right way. And she goes, yeah, that's the right thing to do. She goes, that sounds correct. And her husband's like, nope, we're not doing that. And I look at him, I'm like, what? And she's like, and she looks at him, she's like, I think this makes total sense. You know, the other doctor really messed it up and like, it doesn't look right. He goes, that's not my plan. I've got my own plan for you.
Ew.
And he was some type of a doctor, but he was not a plastic surgeon.
Right.
Yeah. And so I'm looking at him like, okay. And I go, well, and I explained exactly like, this is what totally makes sense. And it really, when you look at her body, like it 100%, this is a way to get her looking the way she wanted to.
Right.
And he's just like, nope, I've got my own plans. And, you know, thank you so much for your time, doctor. We're leaving.
That's like, so cringy.
After she is like, yes, this makes sense to me. Let's do this, Dr. Yoon. And then he's sitting there and, you know, they had his arms folded and was like, nope, you're not doing that. I got my own plans for you. And like, what kind of doctor? Maybe he's a podiatrist for all I know. Like, why is he deciding what she should have done? You hear this type of stuff all the time.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever brought a man into my plastic surgery appointments because it's my body and I'm going to do what I want with it. I don't care what their opinion is. So ladies, leave the men at home unless they're supportive.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and I'd say 95% of men who are there are super supportive. They're like, whatever you want. Like I don't think you need anything. You're beautiful the way you are, but whatever you want is fine. I'll support you. And like, that's the way you got to do it. But every so often you get some guys that are just like, I want her to be bigger than that. And you're just like, what? Like, she's like, I like this size. I'm like, honey, you told me you're going to go bigger. You know, I like big breasts. And it's
I can't stand that.
It just, like you just want to smack them.
Let's touch base on your social media because you have a huge following on TikTok. You're at like, what, 8.1 million?
I think I'm at 8.3 or something.
Yeah, like that's insane. Like you are TikTok's plastic surgeon.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Do you love it?
All the teenagers, like they recognize me and my kids get a kick out of it.
Oh, I love that.
I'm actually somehow the cool dad. Like I was never the cool teenager, but I'm somehow the cool dad.
Isn't it crazy how life comes full circle?
I think it's more like not a full circle, more like 180 degrees.
Aw, but I mean, you do such a good job. Like,
thank you.
Do you have a marketing team or do you do that all yourself?
No, it's all me.
I love that.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's when the pandemic hit and I started creating content. I was trying to figure out how do I like pay my employees. And the biggest check I was getting was from Google for my YouTube channel.
Yep.
So I'm like, well, let me create more content. And I wasn't worried about getting patients in because my office was closed for 2.5 months. So I was like, hey, let me just create content that could make people smile, take them out of the crazy, lonely, scary time for even 30 seconds. And you know, it's like what you're doing. I mean, I love what you're doing. It's like you give people a chuckle. It's like you're not taking yourself too seriously.
You can't.
And people love that.
Yeah.
And one of the best things I got is I had all these messages after, you know, things kind of opening up. And it's like, hey, thank you for keeping me company during the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, I was lonely and you helped keep me company. I'm like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. It's amazing what just a smile can do for somebody, you know, like you never know who's watching that video on the other end. And I think it's awesome that you have created this community of a safe space where people can actually come to you and you're actually like accessible. Most plastic surgeons or like doctors of your stature are not accessible. And I think that's what kind of sets you apart. So
I think that part of it is like, it's weird, like not caring about clout gives you clout.
Right.
And there's so many people in my field who are buying followers, you know,
I mean,
you could tell like, you know, they've got like, you know, more Instagram followers than me, but they get like three comments and 20,000 likes. And you're like, yeah. What? Like, yeah. There's something wrong here. You know?
You're like,
and
what's going on?
Yeah, the field of plastic surgery, there's a lot of really good doctors out there. And then there's a lot of people who are just, they want clout and they want money. And like, that's all that matters. And it's just, it's nuts.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so much more to life than that. So
sitting here talking to you makes me have faith in the medical field again, because for the longest time I lost hope, because you run into so many doctors who don't have a heart and don't care about their patients. And, you know, sitting here with you for this past, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours has been kind of healing, because we need more doctors like you in the world, and people who actually really care and have a heart and, you know, want people to heal and not just hurt. So
I think that there's a lot of doctors who want that. I think there's a lot of doctors, unfortunately, right now that don't know what they don't know. Mm. And what we're talking about, a lot of things we're talking about with kind of alternative medicine and holistic medicine and looking at the root cause of both aging as well as disease, there is a big trend towards going in that direction. Mm-hmm. And I'm really happy to see that. Mm-hmm. And eventually traditional medicine is going to get there, because for me, I believe that the best approach when you're looking at health is combining both the East and West, is a true what we call integrative approach, where you combine traditional medicine, which is definitely needed. You know, when you get injured, you need traditional medicine.
Absolutely.
But with alternative medicine and progressive kind of health, where we're looking at things, you know, like your environmental exposures, mm-hmm. you know, like what you're putting on your skin, like the type of food that you're eating, all that is so, so important. And they're just not getting it in traditional medical school much at all.
Yeah.
But there's a trend there, that direction. And I have faith in the younger generation that they're going to make the world a better place than what, you know. See, I'm Gen X.
Yeah.
You're a millennial.
No, I'm 43. So
you're a millennial, I think.
Nope, I'm Gen X. Yeah.
You're X with me?
Yeah.
Well, as I say, I mean, I feel like our generation has dropped the ball a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I see my kids and their generation, and I feel like they're less judgmental than we are. They care more about the environment and the world and doing the right thing in general.
That's because we raised them right. Our parents, we kind of had to get our parents' trauma pushed on us, and the way that they were raised pushed on us, whereas we kind of figured it out for ourselves as we got older. So now we're giving them the opportunity to be less non-judgmental and more open to things.
I think there's definitely something there.
Yeah.
But I have faith in that the world is always, you know, and it always goes in the right direction eventually, and fits and starts and ups and downs, but eventually it goes in the right direction.
I love it. Yeah, so. Dr. Tony, your book comes out January 2nd,
yes,
correct?
Yep.
And it's going to be they can buy it anywhere?
So yes. So it's called Younger for Life. It's wherever books are sold. I try to encourage people to support your local bookstore. Mm-hmm. One way you can do that is if you go to bookshop.org. Mm-hmm. Bookshop.org is a website where, kind of like Amazon or Barnes & Noble and stuff like that, where if you actually put the book in there, and you can actually choose your local independent bookstore, and anything that you buy, that profit of that sale will go to that independent bookstore.
Oh, wow. I never knew that.
Yeah. So if you've got a little one, like a small bookstore in your community, and they're not big enough to have their own big website and fancy website, most of the time they're going to be on bookshop.org. And if you buy the book, like my book, Younger for Life, mm-hmm. on there, you can choose that bookstore and then actually give the profit to them. So it's really cool that way. But otherwise, it's at Costco, it's at Target, it's everywhere. I don't want to get those places mad at me.
How accomplished do you feel, though, being an author of 4 books? Like, that's amazing. I'm writing my first book this year, and I couldn't even imagine having 4.
It's like having a baby. It's you're proud of it, but it can be quite painful, the writing process. But in the end, like, when you see the results of it and you hear from people whose lives are changed from it, it's definitely makes that path worthwhile.
That's amazing. So, you guys go out and get this book when it drops. By the time this will probably be coinciding with your drop too.
That would
so
be awesome. Thank
yeah.
you.
So you guys go out and get this book. I'm gonna read it, so I'm sure you guys will hear about it on future podcasts. Dr. Tony, thank you so much for coming sitting with me, and I just love picking your brain, and you need to come back like once a year.
I'd love that, definitely.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Why don't you tell people where they can find you and your practice and plug all things?
Yeah, so I'm all over social media. If you are interested in the book, though, go to autojuvenation.com. So we talked about autojuvenation, the kind of 5 ways to target that. But autojuvenation.com, if you do buy the book, we do have free gifts, including a companion recipe book with really tasty recipes. We give a $30 gift certificate to my online store, Yoon Beauty. So I've got my own line of natural and organic skincare products.
Yes, which he brought me a whole bag.
Yes,
right
yes.
Here.
I hope you like them.
I'm going to rub them all over my face tonight. You guys have no idea how excited I am.
The idea is that Yoon Beauty is a combination of medical grade products that are natural and organic. It's right. The idea is to bridge the gap between natural products and medical grade products so that you kind of have the best of both.
Yeah.
So we give you a gift certificate for that. There's a quick start guide, a bunch of other things. If you get the book, go to autojuvenation.com.
Yay, love that. And then social media is just Dr. Tony everywhere?
It's Dr. Yoon. And then Instagram, I'm Tony Yoon MD because I can't get anybody there to let me change my name. So
are you verified?
It's Dr. Yoon everywhere. I'm verified everywhere.
Yeah, that's why. Once you're verified, you can't change your name.
I can't get a hold of anybody at Instagram either way, but all the other ones. I can, but it's all good. But yeah, you can just find me. But Dr. Yoon, you'll find me. I'm very easy to find. I'm everywhere.
You're awesome. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Dumb Blonde. I'll see you guys next week. Bye.